September 1859.
What to do?
The man looking in the mirror in this flea-pit San Francisco hotel room is balding, with sad eyes and mutton-chop whiskers. He used to be a businessman, but his savings and his business have been destroyed by unwise speculation. Joshua Abraham Norton wears a threadbare frock coat with matching vest and pants. His shirt, once white, is grey. A black silk bow hangs limply at his throat. He gazes sadly at his reflection in the cracked mirror on the washstand.
No hope.
He is sad, he is lonely, and he is hungry. And he holds an opened cutthroat razor in his hand.
Well, Joshua, what are you going to do now?
Sitting cross-legged on Norton's bed, watching him, is despair of the endless.
Suicide? You would not be the first failed businessman to take that route. 10 years ago, you were a rich man, rich and happy. And now? Now, you're nothing, Joshua.
Despair is naked, her black hair pulled up into a topknot. Her face is wide, flat and blank. Her teeth are small, sharp things that protrude from her lower jaw even when her mouth is shut. She stares at Norton, who has no idea that she is here.
I am nothing.
Nothing, did I say? No, not nothing. You have potential, Joshua. Potential for despair. Perhaps for more than that.
Despair wears a ring with a fishhook set into it. She holds it up to her face, staring at the hook.
My brother, I do not stand in my gallery. Neither do I hold your sigil in my hand. But I call on you. Dream. Come to your sister.
As if to seal some compact, she draws the hook of the ring across her chest, leaving a line of blood which drips down her heavy breasts.
Come. Come to despair.
You called me, my sister, and I have come.
The Sandman, Act 2, Episode 11, Three Septembers and a January.
Why have you called me?
I have a challenge for you, my brother Dream. A simple challenge.
Morpheus wears a black suit which could have belonged to a romantic poet of 40 years before, a Byron or a Shelley. There is a pouch of sand at his belt, and his face is chalk white, his long hair black, and the only color in his ensemble is the ruby on a pin in his lapel. Despair sits heavily on Norton's little bed, her chest bloody. Norton stands, lost, in front of the grimy mirror. He has no idea they are there. He cannot see or hear either of them.
What to do?
This man, Joshua, has entered my domain. He is in despair. His life has fallen apart. He sits in this little room contemplating death. But he lacks the courage even for that. Life has hurt him. what can you do with your little dreams to redeem him?
I do not play your games, Despair. I will take no part in this.
You will not, or you cannot. The challenge is not just mine. Desire and Delirium will stand with me on this.
No.
I see. You think yourself better than your family, Dream. It is no wonder our brother turned his back on us. You did not care about him. You do not care about us. If you did, he would not have left us.
Oh, very well.
Morpheus reaches into the pouch. As Norton stares, transfixed by the razor blade, Dream blows a handful of dust over him.
Sleep.
Who are you, Joshua? What makes you what you are? What do you dream?
And my dreams, sir? A most peculiar question. But I am Joshua Abraham Norton, entrepreneur and inventor. I dream of the dark day that fortune dealt me an evil hand. A ship full of rice. It was meant to make me truly rich. Instead, it wiped me out. I dream of that. Sometimes I dream that I'm still respected, still a man of worth. But then I wake. Sometimes when I sleep, I am a boy in Africa, once more, dreaming of the new world where I shall make my fortune. But I came to America, the land of possibilities. It is also a land of chaos and confusion, a country without a king. A country without a king.
Brother, what are you doing?
I am walking with Joshua Norton in dreams. I'm trying to understand him.
Dreams. What are dreams? Dreams are nothing, my brother.
Dreams are nothing, sister? Without dreams, there could be no despair.
But there's nowhere to go anymore. Nothing to dream.
Can you really keep him from my realm? From all our realms? Before our oldest sister comes for him?
Death?
That's the challenge, brother. Already I have my hook in his heart. And what is there to understand? He's mortal. He's nothing.
No.
I don't have anything.
Then I will give you a dream, Joshua.
I don't have anything.
Hello?
Then I will give you a dream, Joshua.
Mr. Norton, have you got company with you? I thought I heard folks talking. Mr. Norton?
No, Mrs. Rutledge. I'm alone. But I must request silence, if you please. I am drafting a proclamation.
Oh, well, that's all right, then.
I'll need my hat and coat.
What did you say, Mr. Norton?
A proclamation, Mrs. Rutledge. Now, I must hurry. I'm afraid I'm taking it to the newspaper office. The Evening Bulletin would be best, I think.
A newspaper?
Yes.
Oh, dear.
20 minutes later, at the offices of the San Francisco Evening Bulletin.
And a good day to you, sir. Why, good day, madam. And to you, small child.
Good Lord.
Fitch, was that a story?
Yes, sir. Strangest fellow just walked in with the most peculiar claim.
And who was he?
I've never seen him before, but he looked perfectly normal to me, perfectly polite, just gave me his letter and left. But, read it for yourself.
Oh, very well. At the peremptory request of a large number of the citizens of these United States, I, Joshua Norton, formerly of Algoa Bay, Cape of Good Hope, and for the past 9 years and 10 months of San Francisco, California, declare and proclaim myself Emperor of these United States, and in virtue of the authority in me vested, do hereby order and direct the representatives of the different states of the Union to assemble in the musical hall of this city on the first day of February next to make such alterations in the existing laws of the Union as may ameliorate the evils under which this country is laboring.
And it's signed, Norton First, Emperor of the United States.
Seem normal, you say, Fitch? I must confess myself surprised. Well, what are you going to do with this drivel?
What am I going to do with it? Why, is that not obvious, sir? I'm going to print it.
Why, good day, gentlemen. Good day to you, sir. Sir, is acceptable. The Emperor does not stand on ceremony.
Did you say Emperor?
Outside on Market Street, Emperor Norton waves happily at his unwitting subjects.
Ahoy there, shipmate. It is I, Norton the First. Your king.
You need to lay off the whiskey, shipmate.
Hello! What a remarkably fine day.
Why, yes it is, sir. Oh,
my goodness, I have some remarkably comely subjects.
Watching him, unnoticed, the Lord of Dreams is joined by his older sister.
What have you got yourself into?
A contest.
I can see that, with Delirium and the twins. But honestly, why?
Death, a young woman with shaggy black hair and gothic eye makeup, wears a black dress appropriate to the period. The silver ankh hangs at her neck.
We don't play Desire and Despair's games. You know that as well as I do.
Despair provoked me. She talked about our brother.
So? That's not your fault. It was his decision. He's a grown-up, and I thought you were too.
Good day!
I may have been wrong.
Yes, it is I.
I just hope you know what you're doing.
I hope that same thing on occasion.
Excuse me, sir. Do you have the time?
Would that I had, dear subject, but sadly the Emperor has had to pawn his pocket watch.
Emperor?
At your service, ma'am.
Goodness.
No curtsy. Dear, I feel a proclamation about manners may be called for.
What have you done to that poor man anyway?
I have given him what many mortals have lived and died for, sister.
Thank you, my subjects. It is time for my royal constitution.
Go on.
I have made him king.
No. Damn.
September 1864. The upstairs offices of one of San Francisco's many newspapers, The Morning Call. Samuel Langhorne Clemens is 30, a young man with red hair but sporting the moustache for which he will later be recognized as a renowned author. At this point in his career, he is a journalist and not a particularly successful one.
Damn! Damn! Oh, damn! Damn! Damn!
Damn! Damn! Damn!
The Morning Call is housed in a three-story building which stands next to the ramshackle lodging house where Norton lives. 50 cents a week rent.
Good morning, loyal subjects.
Good morning, Emperor.
Good morning, Mr. Norton. Your Honor.
Emperor Norton himself is terribly thin, leaning on a knobby cane. He's wearing an old Union Army uniform with tarnished golden epaulets. He now has a full beard. Clemens emerges from the front door, still agitated.
Damn, damn, damn. Oh, hiya, Mr. Norton. How's it going?
Not Mr. Norton, Sam. I really shouldn't have to remind you. The correct form of address is Your Majesty. But everything is going very well, thank you. And you?
Oh, bad. Real bad. I ought to be able to make the story work, but it keeps slipping away from me.
Hey, Emperor.
Where's your harem?
Scoundrels.
Say, have you eaten recently, Your Majesty?
I am a little hungry.
Oh, well, I'm down to my last couple of bucks, but come on, I'll buy you dinner.
Sam, I couldn't accept charity from you.
Oh.
But it does occur to me that you've not paid your imperial taxes this year, and they come to, 50 cents.
Oh, Here you go, Your Majesty.
Thank you, Sam. Your receipt.
Now we're both flush. Let us partake of eggs and cold mutton down at the Blue Wing.
Right readily, dear boy.
Norton and Clemens sit in the dining parlor, each with a plate of eggs and cold mutton. Norton has a beer with his meal. Clemens, a large whiskey.
I hesitate to tell you this, Sam, but there are certain individuals who have accused me of, being mad.
You shock me, Your Majesty.
Well, I think perhaps it has something to do with the bridge I've commanded to be built across the bay to Oakland.
A bridge, huh?
San Francisco needs bridges, Sam. People need bridges.
True. Say, Emperor, do you want to hear a funny story?
I don't mind if I do, young Sam.
So, there's a fella, Smiley, who had a frog called Dan'l. A jumping frog, mind.
Sitting watching them at a distant table, he's Morpheus.
Hello, Dream.
Delirium. I expected you long since.
Delirium sits beside her older brother. She's wearing a man's cut-off jacket, and her variously colored hair, shaved at the sides, stands up. Her eyes are large. One is green, the other blue.
This is a weird little town, brother. I mean, everywhere's strange, but I feel at home here. Kind of.
Really?
Delirium holds out a hand, palm upwards. It is empty. As she speaks, a shape begins to appear above it.
You know where I spent today? Well, all these little Chinese girls who come over here. You know, two bits a trick. So by the time they're 20, they're old women. Too diseased to live.
Over Delirium's hand floats a little translucent heart, dripping translucent blood. She gazes into nowhere with her mismatched, unfocused eyes.
Well, they lock them away in these places where they starve to death or they maybe kill themselves. I spent a day with some of them. They're nice. What was I saying? Do you like September? I like September. Ugh.
She slumps onto the table. The heart fades away.
You are here about Norton, I take it. Under the terms of the challenge.
Challenge? Oh, yeah, she said something about that. I don't know.
Clemens is telling his story, making a salt shaker jump as if it's a frog.
A frog can outjump anything!
pray continue.
Well, then he says, one, two, three, jump! And him and the feller touched up the frogs from behind, and the new frog hopped off.
Well, Mr. Norton ought to be mine, but he isn't, is he?
No.
He's so sane. Except about being emperor, of course. And I'm not even sure about that. Are you pleased to see me? Maybe you are. I like to see you, but you're kind of scary.
Perhaps.
Huh?
Perhaps I am pleased to see you, sister.
Oh.
Why, blame my cat if he don't weigh 5 pound. And turned him upside down and he belched out a double handful of shot. And then he see how it was. And he was the maddest man. He set the frog down and took out after that feller. But he never catched him.
Samuel, why don't you write down the story of the frog?
The frog?
People would like to read about the frog. People like things that make them laugh. People laugh at me, you know, Sam.
Don't you mind that, Your Majesty?
Oh, why should I mind, Sam? But let them laugh. I'm still their emperor.
Indeed you are.
I don't like it. I don't like it when people laugh at me.
I like you, Sam. You're a good man. I'm going to do something for you. It's Twain you write under, isn't it?
Mark Twain.
Mark Twain. Mm, yes. I, Norton the First.
While Norton scribbles in his notebook and Sam drinks the last of his whiskey, Delirium, bored with the action, conjures up a little frog with wings. It floats above her hand, like the heart did.
Of Mark Twain. Is made by royal appointment official spinner of tales and teller of stories to these United States of America for the duration of his mortal lifetime. Signed, Norton the First, Emperor. Good. There you go, Sam.
For the duration of my mortal lifetime, huh? That's pretty big of you, Your Majesty.
Well, I must promenade once more to show myself to the multitudes. Duty calls. Oh, Sam, thank you for the meal. I appreciate it.
He's not mine, is he? His madness keeps him sane.
And do you think he is the only one, my sister?
September 1875. 11 years have passed. Norton is now in his late 50s. He's filled out, eating regularly, having hit on a way to make money without doing anything that would compromise his royal status. He looks happier, too, more contented. He wears his best uniform and a beaver top hat with an ostrich feather on the front. He carries a stick with a serpent carved around it. It could almost be a caduceus in some way, a healing stick. Perhaps he is healing San Francisco, or perhaps he is healing America after the ravages of the Civil War. Over his head, he carries a huge green Chinese parasol. He stands in the park, enjoying the late afternoon.
Hey, mister! Would you be the Emperor Norton?
Indeed I am.
Yeah? You know, I was reading about you in our local paper. We're on vacation. We're from Kansas, my wife and I. This is the wife.
Hi.
And this is my daughter, Lizzie. And you were something we thought we ought to keep our eyes peeled for when we was in Frisco.
San Francisco, not Frisco. This is the town of St. Francis.
Sure. Well, do you still do that money thing? I read about that.
These days, Emperor Norton carries books of printed Norton money.
Certainly. That will be 50 cents.
Woo-wee! Wait till I show everybody back home the souvenir. This will be one to tell your grandchildren, Lizzie. You saw the one and only Emperor of the United States.
Your august wisdom! Your imperial magnificence, son of heaven.
A man approaches through the gathering sea fog. He's dressed in the Chinese style of this time, silk cap, silk robe, with a tarred pigtail down his back, a long moustache and a short, wispy beard.
I greet you, I who am not worthy to stand in your shadow.
Good day, Ahao. How goes it amongst my Chinese subjects?
Alas, it goes badly, Lord. Tong wars continue between Kuang Docks and Sui Sing.
No, the Kuang Docks have not yet made reparations, I take it.
No, Lord. But in time they must bend, as the bamboo bends, or they will break like dry twigs.
Hey, Johnny Chinese! You know any good opium joints? Anywhere I can go to dream that special dream?
I'm not here to help you lose your soul. Go away, fool!
Yeah? Well, screw you, Johnny Chinese! Who needs you anyway?
Your Highness, I bring a message for you. Your presence is requested.
Is this a message from my Chinese subjects? How? Am I needed in Chinatown?
I regret not, Lord. Your presence is required at the Cobweb Palace.
The Cobweb Palace? Ah, I see. Well, let us away.
The Cobweb Palace, a saloon and restaurant at Meigs Wharf, on the old waterfront of San Francisco, is owned and run by Abe Warner. He is almost 60, and he'll be managing this strange and ramshackle watering hole for another 20 years or more. Warner's business runs as much on barter as hard cash. He trades drinks for curiosities and exotic pets. Monkeys, parrots, and other creatures peer from their cages around the saloon.
Enough of your nonsense, Grizzle.
Warner refuses to kill spiders, which means that the interior of the saloon is a mass of cobwebs. They hang in festoons from the walls and ceiling, covering the lighting fixtures, walrus tusks, sperm whale teeth, paintings of unclad women, and even the row of bottles behind the bar. Warner himself is dressed in a faded suit, expensive and classy under the dust. The whole place is a cobwebbed, dimly lit treasure trove of strange and arcane things.
What the devil is it, then?
Grandfather, I hear men coming.
Let them enter, Grizzle. They're the first of our guests tonight. Your Majesty. How? Well, gentlemen, what'll it be?
Whatever you want, on the house.
Nothing for me, please, Mr. Warner.
Good evening, Abraham. I will have a glass of white wine, please. A light hock, if you have such a thing.
Will you take a seat at this table, Your Majesty?
Indeed I shall, Ahau.
That's right. Take a royal load off.
Grandfather! I hear a ghost riding towards us. He's coming here.
Oh, calm yourself, Grizzle. I know he's coming. He's the last of our guests. He will not harm us. Not us. Not here.
Greetings, good fellows. It is I, the monarch of monkshood, the wizard of Wolfsbane, the Earl of Aconite, the late, the great, the King of Pain.
There is nothing about the King of Pain that looks dead, though tendrils and wisps of fog swirl about him as he enters. Dressed all in scarlet, scarlet suit, cloak, and top hat, he is clean-shaven with red hair. His features reveal a mix of Caucasian, African, and Native American blood. A sword hangs at his side.
Remember me?
The King of Pain, the Aconite liniment salesman. I know you, but I heard that you had killed yourself over gambling debts. I am pleased to see that you are healthy.
Healthy? I'm dead, Norton. You ever swallowed aconite? You don't get up and walk away again.
But then...
No questions, Joshua. You don't mind if I call you Joshua? One king to another, after all. My principal sent me here with an offer for you.
Your principal?
My principal heard about your problem, Joshua.
I have no problems, Payne.
No problems? New problems, Joshua, buddy, Bobby. You don't have an empress. You may be Norton 1, but where are Norton's 2 to 16 going to come from? The stork isn't going to bring them.
I must admit that the subject has not escaped my notice. I have proposed matrimony to a number of eligible ladies, but alas, I fear they are all intimidated by my rank, and to date they have all refused me.
Yeah, well, no surprises there. So, let's see what the cards say. Okay, Josh, this is the score. I can offer you a few potential empresses. Take your pick. Oh, before I turn the cards over, you want to see them with their clothes on or off?
Sir!
Okay, okay. Don't get yourself all riled up. Here's the choice. 5 potential queens. All top drawer, genuine, sweet as pie aristocrats. You choose.
Those are 5 very attractive women. And I do see a tiara or two, so they could prove eligible as a consort.
Oh, but that's not all I'm offering.
A palace of marble with pillars.
You can't take your new empress back to your little commercial street walk-up, can you? You give the word, Joshua. Building starts tomorrow. Nice house, huh?
I don't understand, sir. Are you expecting me to do some kind of a deal with you?
Oh, no, 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 no. Well, only a little one. Look at her. Isn't she beautiful? She could be yours, Joshua. All yours. All you have to do is want her. All you have to do is want.
King of Pain, if that is who you truly are, for I am a rational man and do not believe in ghosts. I am the Emperor of the United States and Protector of Mexico. It is true that my rent is but 50 cents a week. It is true that my clothes were a gift from the city council. I exchange federal currency for my own, and thus I live. Many restaurants and eating houses now accept my scrip. This is my city, in my country. They treat me well here. I want nothing.
But you could be a real emperor, goddammit. You can have anything you want.
Loyal friend.
Your Majesty?
You were with me when they arrested me for lunacy, and when they released me. Do you remember what the judge told the young patrolman?
I am your chamberlain, Highness. I forget nothing. He said, Mr. Norton has shed no blood, robbed no one, and despoiled no country, which is more than can be said for most fellows in the king line.
I am the Emperor of the United States, Payne. I am content to be what I am. What more than that could any man desire?
Warm flesh writhing beneath your own young, scented, moist female flesh. Power, money, don't you want anything?
Sir, this conversation is unfitting and is at an end. Abraham, please show the King of Pain the door.
With pleasure, Your Majesty. Out you go, laughing boy.
Well, good night, gents. You can keep the pretty pictures.
How? What happened here this evening?
The Emperor was offered a choice. The Emperor said no. That is the Emperor's prerogative.
Abraham, another glass of wine, if you please.
Coming right up.
This is a grim season. I need something to warm me inside and protect me from the darkness and the fog.
The King of Pain, smiling no longer, walks away from the Cobweb Palace. From out of the fog, a black coach, pulled by six white horses, pulls up beside him. Desire of the Endless, dressed in a business suit with a feather boa, looks down from inside the coach. Desire looks unimpressed.
So, you failed.
Yeah. Sorry, Desire.
Desire turns to the person sitting opposite them in the coach. A thin, white-faced, black-haired man in a suit with a black top hat in his lap.
How? How did you do that dream? Norton lusts after women. I can feel it.
He wants so badly. There was no way he could say no. He had no protection. He should have been mine.
He has his dignity, sibling. He is, after all,
an emperor.
Don't give me that shit dream. He's no king. He's a crazy man with a cockeyed fantasy. Payne, get your dead ass in here. We're going.
As you wish, Desire.
Desire, you disappoint me. This evening's display, bringing back a dead man to offer Norton the pleasures of the world. It wasn't very subtle.
Go screw yourself, big brother. Drive! Get down and lick pain. He wants subtle? He'll get subtle. Just watch me. Not here, not with Norton.
But I'll make him spill family blood. I'll bring the kindly ones down on his blasted head. One day.
January the 8th, 1880, 8 p.m. Oh, the rain is torrential, and even without it, the wind would be cold, gusty, and unpleasant. Norton, a small figure bowed by the effort, is holding up his large red and green parasol made of waxed paper as an umbrella against the wind and rain. He toils up an almost vertical San Francisco street. He looks worn and tired, all of his 62 years and more. A gust of wind snatches the parasol away and down the hill.
No!
Norton is having a stroke, what a physician of his time might have called a sanguineous apoplexy. He has fallen to his knees on the edge of the sidewalk. His mouth is wide open, but no words are coming out. Rolling onto his back into the gutter on the side of the road, his hat has half fallen off. The ostrich feather is limp and wet. He's still alive, just. A little froth dribbles from his mouth. His eyes are wide open, but he couldn't talk, not even if he wanted to. Norton dimly sees somebody approach and stand over him. Despair of the Endless looks down, and she shakes her head.
I hoped that you would come back to me, Joshua. But no. I would seem to have failed. You're a pitiful madman, a Tom of Bedlam, dying in the gutter in the rain. But you never despaired.
Another figure joins her. Tall, thin, white-faced, black-haired, with eyes like stars.
You won.
So it would appear, my sister. Here, I have something for you to remember this little challenge by.
What is it?
A statuette. They sell them in this town, mementos for travelers from distant parts of the emperor of this land.
Oh.
Keep it, Despair. Take it back with you to the world behind the mirrors. Keep it as a souvenir.
Should I thank you?
For the lesson? Perhaps. If for nothing else.
What lesson? Wait!
Norton looks up. They have gone. His eyes begin to dim.
Time's up, Your Majesty.
Death has come. Death wearing black tights and a cut-off black swallowtail coat with a mass of spiky black hair. Norton knows it is her, and Norton dies.
How are you feeling?
Well, I don't know. I was to attend a meeting of the Hastings Society this evening when it felt like something struck me in the chest. I feel very strange.
They walk away from the soaked, dirty old body. Norton has no need of it now.
You were Jewish once, weren't you, Joshua? Did you ever hear the story of the 36 Zadokim?
I do not believe so.
They say that the world rests on the backs of 36 living saints. 36 unselfish men and women. Because of them, the world continues to exist.
Oh?
They are the secret kings and queens of this world.
An odd legend, young lady, but I'm afraid I do not see its significance.
No? I've met a lot of kings and emperors and heads of state in my time, Joshua. I've met them all. And you know something? I think I liked you best.
Well, thank
you, young lady.
Behind them, in the world of the living, where the rain still falls, a couple of wet people bend over Norton's corpse. One of them raises it to a sitting position.
It's a great hat. Can I try it on?
Oh, I don't see why not.
They walk off into the mist, Norton arm in arm with Death, who now wears Norton's hat with the ostrich feather. Two cheerful people, arm in arm, heading off, Death alone knows where. Joshua Norton was buried on Sunday the 10th of January, 1880. 10,000 people filed past the body as it lay in state, and his funeral cortege was over 2 miles long. His burial was marked by a total eclipse of the sun. He was the first and last emperor of the United States of America.
Confess, I have always wondered what lay beyond life, my dear.
Yeah, everybody wonders. And sooner or later, everybody gets to find out.